Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
I'm Zach.
And we are back once again with David from the Lorehounds. David, how you doing? How's the minute format working out for you?
It's good. It's good. I feel like I'm flooding your communications channels, though. So I hope I'm not... you guys keep it a little punchier, and I seem to be doing my Lorehounds thing, which is to talk long-windedly about lots of obscure topics. But look, man, I appreciate you guys having me here.
If we didn't like talking about Dune for hours,
we wouldn't be here.
You know, we wouldn't be here, and we wouldn't have guests. So we appreciate your time and everything coming on. I know it's a Sunday for us now, and you've probably got family stuff that you're giving up. So we're very appreciative of that.
Well, it feels good to stretch with some other Dune heads to really and be able to talk about stuff without having to spend a lot of time explaining like why it matters or what it's. So it's just good to be with other Dune nerds. You know what I'm saying?
It also must be a nice palate cleanser for you because, like you've said, you guys have on the Lorehounds side of things have just been so like Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. Yeah. So like having something different to think about for a little bit must be nice as well.
It's fun. So. Yeah, we just rolled off. Well, Alicia and John just rolled off of Wheel of Time, which was quite intense. I was on Severance prior to that. They're also doing some Doctor Who coverage, so you know, more strength to them. But then, we're deep into Andor right now, and we're doing it squadron style. So we're doing three episodes a week, one for each drop in the arc. And John is covering the first, Alicia covering the second, and I'm covering the third. And then we're rotating in different guest hosts to sit with us, our sort of co-pilots, as we say. So I've got the anchor position each week, which means that we get to talk about the prior two episodes as well. So I have to watch, and we're doing our best to not pre-spoil. So if somebody did watch an episode ahead, sometimes they're not watching them, sometimes they are, but then they really have to keep it zipped. I have to, by the time I record with whoever my co-host is that week, I have to have watched all three previous episodes at least twice prior to my recording time. For this last episode, I did it about three times. And then I have to prepare the outline and everything like that. So it's being the anchor leg of any relay race is never an easy thing.
I think I say this every time we sit down and talk, but I'm so impressed with how much time y'all put into this. That's so crazy.
It is crazy. And it's just a good thing that we're a tripod because, having three legs, when it was just John and I, it could get rough, but having Alicia come in with her encyclopedic knowledge of so many worlds and her love of podcasting, it like really completes us. So
good deal.
Well, our episodes are a bit more focused instead of entire
you guys are lucky.
You know, instead of entire arcs, we're going minute by minute. And in fact, for this minute for this episode of the Dune Minute, we are talking about minutes 43 through 44 of Dune Part 2.
Minutes? Once John? Minutes?
Oh, fuck it. Oh, no, I did it.
Now.
I did it. Shit.
In trouble now.
Fuck.
You know, Zach, I think John needs a little spiced coffee.
Yeah. He can have my cup.
He's a little pick-me-up.
No, we are talking about minute 43 through 44. Normally, I'm the one getting on your ass about that, but here we are several hours into this. Last minute, I had last minute on the mind as well because we got cut off mid-sentence once again. So, we left off with Stilgar shushing the Fremen in the tent as they were all laughing at Paul's idea of, you know, taking the name Muad'Dib. And Stilgar's response was, no, shh, Muad'Dib is wise in the ways of the desert. And in my notes here, strings are slowly starting to rise because ever since our conversation with Raoul, I've been ever so like more diligent about the music notes and everything that are in this place. Muad'Dib creates his own water. The constellation that points to the North Star we call Muad'Dib, the one who points the way. That is a powerful name. Now you are our brother, and Stilgar rubs his eyes with his thumbs and then does the same to Paul. Paul Muad'Dib Usul.
Oi!
And then everyone starts to celebrate.
So a couple of things in this, the rubbing of the eyes, I took this as a a moisture sharing gesture.
Yep.
You know, interesting.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, if I, maybe I just have very watery eyes, but if I rub my eyes and you know, there's probably going to be some kind of moisture on them just for some tear ducts. And then he puts his moisture onto Paul, you know, it's a sharing of moisture, which is something that we already know is a very respectful gesture in the Fremen culture. So I don't know, call me crazy, but that's how I interpreted that.
Yeah. And we get it in part one too, because what, the first time we see Stilgar, he just hawks a massive loogie on the floor in front of Leto and Paul and Duncan. And Duncan being the voice of reason at that point, because Gurney was like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill you. Duncan's like, hold on, hold on, chill, chill. Stilgar, we accept your moisture in the manner that it was given.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's interesting, though. I was watching the third eye touching thing too, and I was interpreting it. I was trying to understand what I was seeing, and I, you know, who thought of it or how they thought of it. Regardless, it's a beautiful gesture. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of it more in the sense of, we see you, like, here's my third eye, and sure, I'm closing your eyes, and then you're opening them to this new reality. That's the kind of direction that I was going to. And then we, the community, now see you as a new person.
Admittedly, it's difficult to see what's happening, though, because the way the shot is done, the camera is looking
down and low, looking up.
Down low, up from behind Javier Bardem at Paul. So we can't see what Stilgar is doing, whether he's touching his lips, his eyes, his forehead, whatever it is. It's very difficult.
One-handed or two-handed, I couldn't quite tell, because he uses two hands on Paul's face. So
right.
Yeah.
It's hard to see truly, like, what's going on here. I had wished that was one of the things where they had done a side shot instead, but I understand why they wanted the focus on Paul for that shot, right?
And there's a script discrepancy, Zach. I don't know if you saw this as well. It says Stilgar touches Paul's forehead with the palm of his hand right on the third eye.
Oh, no, I missed that one. Okay.
Yeah, on page 33, it looks like.
Gotcha.
Or page 35, at least on the PDF. Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting thing. Maybe Bardem did something different. You know, again, who knows how many takes they had, what was chosen in the editing bay.
I mean, and that's one of the things we've talked about with movies, too. Like, words and gestures are changed on the fly because they may have a vision in their head as they're writing the script, and then the actors do it, and Denis Villeneuve might have said, actually, that looks stupid as fuck. Let's try something else, you know?
So. But in
Bardem,
French.
You're shit. I don't know why I hired you. Yeah, get out of here. So interesting, I wanted to dive in a little bit on this. The constellation that points north we call Muad'Dib. So that's a nice, right? It brings back the book constellation aspect of it as opposed to the moon aspect of it in Lynch's 84 movie. But then if you think about Paul... Muad'Dib Usul. Paul is a duke's name. It's a name that's, you know, in Gaelic that is... why couldn't it have been Paul with two L's? I mean, right. That's one thing my co-host John on the Lorehounds is always giving Dune heads shit about the... Like, Paul Muad'Dib. Come on, man. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, Paul Muad'Dib Usul. So Muad'Dib, right, his Fadaikan name, his war name, wise in the ways of the desert, all of that. And then Usul, like we talked about in the last minute, strength at the base of the pillar, strength of the pillar. So if you think about the name, the Fremen name, the teacher who is wise in the ways of the desert, who points the way and who is the foundation of our community.
Yeah.
Dude, that's seriously great. Powerful name. That's throw a really duke's good. Title on the top of it? Like,
that's pumping the ego of a 15-year-old way beyond where it should be pumped.
Way beyond.
I don't know if you remember how you were when you were 15, but if someone called me the teacher and the foundation of a community and our leader, like, I would ride that high until the end of time.
Yeah. And it's interesting that now that you say that actually gives me a new insight too on the importance of the relationship between Stilgar and Paul. And Stilgar says, like, do not, you know, when he goes under the sandworm, like, don't fuck this up. because it's my teaching. Don't make my teachings a mockery, or, you know, whatever the specific line is that there is, that Stilgar really does step in to be that male adult figure in Paul's life. Mm-hmm. Now that he's had Gurney taken from him, Duncan taken from him, his father taken from him, he doesn't have that that male aspect character, or that male aspect adult in his life that young, and I'm going to be very gender specific, young men at that time need, you know, yeah, strong male role models to help them navigate the physiological and psychological changes that they're going through.
Yeah.
Bro, what do you mean? It's there's nothing tumultuous in a man's life. At 15.
You mean the flood of testosterone that courses through our bodies at that age? No, it doesn't mess with our brains.
Not at all.
I think that highlighting, and then that, you know, Stilgar does the naming. It's obvious he's the leader, blah blah blah. But it really is, I think, more of a touching moment that, given that what Paul has lost and now what Paul has been given by this community.
Yeah.
Are you tearing up, Zach? I see you.
I was. Yeah, it's a very moving moment.
The other thing, if I can monologue slightly longer, yeah, too, with this shot, because John, you'd mentioned this before about the camera angles and stuff. I really love this whole sequence, this in the tent, that the shots are this mixture of fixed camera shots and verite camera shots. So, you know, when we're up looking up, it's verite, and we see the camera sort of floating around, but like when we look back at Chani and Shikali, it's locked, and then we have a nice rack focus between the two characters. So, so really smart camera work throughout this whole sequence, where it could be really hard in this tent. It's dark, a lot of still suits that are half unzipped, and, you know, yeah. So but the way that they've shot this entire sequence is, I thought, more than competent, right? It's excellent cinematography. Mm-hmm. It's excellent storytelling.
Yeah. John, who did we say was the cinematographer on this one? The name's escaping me right now. It wasn't.
Fuck, you're going to make me look this up.
I thought if you knew it off the top of your head.
Cinematography for Dune Part 2. Greg Fraser.
Greg Fraser. Okay.
Yeah, he did both Part 1 and Part 2. So.
Gotcha. We have, it's embarrassing forgetting the name and then saying what I'm about to say. We have, praised the cinematography a lot on the show. And it's just, that is a part of making a movie that it, you know, tells a story, is able to tell the story, almost as good, if not better, than the script can.
Absolutely.
David, if you're not familiar, because we talked about this in some of the early episodes for this season, Greg Fraser's resume is fucking impressive as shit.
Okay.
Zero Dark Thirty, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Vice, Dune Part 1, Dune Part 2, The Batman, looking through here, 8, there's a lot that he has for his cinematography that is just like, holy shit. Like, this guy has shot quite a bit. Killing Them Softly.
It's quite an extensive filmography too. Yeah.
He's got quite a IMDb page here. So.
That's great. The creator. Yeah. Oh, so I wonder if he was hanging with, if he did Rogue One and the creator, he was hanging with Gareth Edwards. I wonder if he's Gareth Edwards' buddy.
I would assume so. Gareth Edwards, no, it wasn't Gareth Edwards. There's someone that, it might have been Gareth Edwards, and this is all rumor and speculation, but apparently, like, they're trying to tap him for Children.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong on that. So
okay, I like Gareth Edwards's vision and sensibility, but I don't. Maybe he's a better writer than director, because it sounded like Rogue One was a hot mess, and I really loved a lot of the ideas that the creator was playing with and visually, but it was not a good movie.
I would respectfully disagree. It's my favorite Star Wars movie.
The creator, or Rogue One?
No, it's Rogue One.
Oh, no, it is my favorite Star Wars movie. Prior to Gilroy stepping in and rescuing it, apparently it was a hot mess. because Tony Gilroy was brought in to reshoot and re-edit the movie. So
that's I thought Frasier was brought in to reshoot and re-edit.
Nope, it was Gilroy. That or I will stand
Edwards.
On. No, Edwards was the initial director, and Gilroy was brought in to rescue it.
Okay, he's credited. Anyways.
He is credited, but it's Gilroy who came in and, yeah. You know, I am sure that's a hill I will die on.
Okay, interesting. All right, well.
And that's how Gilroy got the Andor series, because Kathleen Kennedy was like, oh my God, thank you so much for saving our asses.
Got it, okay.
Help us, Tony Gilroy, you're our only hope.
while we're in the section that's going to get cut out here and everything, one of the things that was shot and pulled from part two was there were actually a few scenes with Stephen McKinley Henderson and having Thufir Hawat in part two.
Oh, interesting.
And all of those were cut. He was actually even so far as present in the fight between Paul and Fade Rotha in that room.
Oh,
there's actually a very noticeable gap between standing actors where he was that they just removed him.
Interesting.
There's behind the scene photos where you can see him standing next to Gurney Halleck.
That's a whole other other conversation. I think we should probably.
And so after Stilgar wipes his eyes, we get the big laugh scene of this week, I feel like. Yes, Stilgar does his hooey. And I love it. It's so great. This is the energy that Javier Bardem really brings to the role, and we're going to get to see a lot more of it as the movie goes on. But it's wonderful. I love it so much.
Are you guys fans of No Country for Old Men?
Oh, yes.
Favorite movie of all time.
It's my up there. Yeah, it's pretty high on my list as well. Pretty high on my list. I even tried to build a whole role-playing scenario, RPG, using the whole Numenera setting to do a thing, because I really wanted a Anton Chigurh character. I wanted to use that in some sort of, you know, RPG scenario. I love the idea of the secret hunter stalking the party as they're trying to solve a mystery.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. We have to point, too, to this moment when Chani is seeing the naming ceremony and she's feeling a little conflicted, I think. I don't know. There was a look on Zendaya's face there like, oh, is this really happening? Am I good with this? I'm not sure. But then when they embrace, there's a little ziz there between them, right? You know, when they touch cheeks a little bit. Of course, I can't help but think of, and she says Usul, but then I'm thinking 84. Tell me of your homeworld, Usul.
Yeah, exactly. So this is what, this is what happens. Each of the Fremen come up to Paul and they say his name. They say Paul Muad'Dib Usul. And I think it's an important distinction that Chani does not say Paul Muad'Dib Usul. She just, she only says the secret Fremen name, Usul, which feels like a romantic gesture more than anything.
Right. Yeah, good call. Good call.
Yeah, they definitely have that like awkward, like just enough space that like they could kiss, but they're not gonna. But they're like embracing each other still thing, and that's definitely the moment I think where she like fully flips over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agreed. Agreed.
But then, bang! Smash cut. We're out of the tent.
Yeah, to a very very abrupt change to just the loudest sounds of like Shai Hulud tearing through the fucking desert at this point. And I can't not comment on the sound design. First of all, it won an Oscar, rightfully so. But to me, this sounds like listening to this, and because this is the Dune Minute and we go back second by second, to me, this scene just evokes core memories of a child or of childhood when I grew up in Florida and we would go down to Cape Canaveral and like from even like 40 or 50 miles out on the beach, just watch all these rockets go off. And even that far away, you would hear the just thundering sound in the distance. And that's what it sounded like, was a rocket, you know, just getting launched.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Like, you know, I've been spending a lot more time looking at and listening to planes recently, David. I don't know if you caught onto this from other stuff, but I'm in the process of getting my pilot's license.
I haven't heard that. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little side thing I'm doing. As if I didn't have enough going on in my life, I just, you know, picked this up too. But I could distinctly.
Well, when we finally have our Lorehounds moot someday, we're planning for our 5-year anniversary, we're going to get together. You could, you know, fly up and yeah, exactly. Everybody rides around in your ornithopter.
Yeah, exactly. I distinctly heard a commercial airline jet engine in the sound here. It had that very, very stereotypical like turbine whine. Overtone. And I don't know, maybe it's just cause I've been listening to a lot of that stuff, lately, but I heard that out of the, or in the mix here. So I would not be surprised if that was some sound that got layered on, you know, and edited into this.
My notes actually say on the back of a jet plane.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about this before in the earlier minutes about Villeneuve's interpretation of this world of Arrakis and Fremen technology and culture. How he portrays riding on the back of a sandworm, I was like, oh, right, that's probably, you know, yeah, that's probably more accurate than Lynch had it.
Oh, sure.
In his movie. Yeah. And it was like the fact that you need goggles and headdress and mm-hmm. all of that it is, because that thing is hauling ass. And I think it really, really works as an interpretation of what it would be like to be on a sandworm.
Yeah. John, we, in the spice harvester scene from the first movie, I remember we gave some speeds that the worms travel across the desert.
Oh, interesting.
Do you remember what those are?
27 and a half miles an hour.
27
and a half miles an hour. And that was specifically calculated based on the in-movie given distance. Where we knew that worm sign was 3.7 kilometers away, and that we were given a ETA of 5 minutes. Do some quick math. That's roughly 740 meters per minute or 27 and a half miles an hour.
Gotcha.
Granted, I knew I liked you guys for a reason. that's good lore nerd stuff.
There's, you know, variances in the size of Shai Hulud and probably like the depth at which it's traveling and everything. I would assume if it's traveling up on top of the sand, there's half as much body resistance, so it's probably able to travel faster, yada, yada, yada. You know, there's a lot of science and math behind the movements of Shai Hulud. So much so that they actually, in the extras for the movie, go on to talk about what this giant 450-meter-long, you know, sandworm would sound like, you know, mm-hmm. dragging across the sand and everything. Mm-hmm.
Not to mention too that the rings are expanding and contracting. That's how it's moving, right? So there's that whole moving of its shell, of its carapace.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. if that's the right word for its structure. So there's just the sound that the worm makes itself, let alone the friction of the worm moving on the surface.
Yeah, I would love to see what the final like Pro Tools projects look like in terms of just how many bits of audio are layered on top of these sound effect sequences that they have. So yeah, it's a lot that's just going on. And yeah, like we talked about, this is a explosive change from the quiet, you know, of the tent. And
foreshadowing for Paul's future. Going from getting his Fedaiken name, getting that acknowledgement from Shishkali, right, who's going to, you know, she's the stand-in for the young people coming to his side. And then obviously Stilgar has been excited about him for all this time. But now Chani, like you said, John, is now her perception of him has changed. And so the last thing he needs to do is ride a worm. And mm-hmm. Denis gives us that. Very directly in our faces.
Yep.
One of the things we talked about, or Zach mentioned in one of the earlier minutes this week, is how there's a lot of callbacks in this in this 5-minute sequence that we have for this week, one of which we get right now, because we get a very similar tracking shot to one that we had a few weeks ago, where Paul was, quote, sand walking like a drunk lizard, and Chani was sitting atop a dune observing him, though Paul thought it was a djinn, and thought it was Jameis.
Right.
We have that same style tracking shot where we're watching Stilgar on the worm in the distance, and then Paul from the right, sitting atop a dune, gets, you know, slides into frame, and our minute ends with Paul beginning to wave and yelling, "Hey!" Which, first of all, why are you trying to talk to Stilgar? Because that's going to be so fucking loud on top of the worm. He's not going to be able
so
to
far
hear
away
a thing. Exactly. Like, even trying to yell at someone like down the street from you, you very quickly realize, you know, how much your voice gets lost over distance like that. So,
yeah. John, I think the prescience has shifted to your side now, and you're looking at my notes, because I have this same note. Camera is tracking at the same rate as the sandworm.
Yep.
Nice.
It's a great, great shot. Mm-hmm. There's a, I hate to bring in any Star Wars into this quickly, but there's a great shot from episode 6 of Andor season 2, where they do a similar thing, but it's even more incredible, where a camera is tracking and then releases from what the object is that it was riding on, and then circles around something, and then that object flies off and away and down while the camera leaves behind. And I love relative motion between camera and object whenever they do something like that. I think it's, and to bring Paul into frame by using the motion of the sandworm to move it, it's a really smart shot.
They that's a theme throughout this movie, is shots like that. So it must be a favorite of the cinematographer.
A go-to, right? Yeah, right. Well, all I have to say is bless the maker and his water, and bless the coming and going of him, and may his passage cleanse the world. May he keep the world for his people.
There you go.
Bilal Kaifa.
And with your spirit, I guess. I don't know.
And with
you, yeah. What? Huh?
All right, cool. Well, that's I don't have any other notes for this one, so let's.
I have some notes from the Dune Encyclopedia.
Oh, okay. I see. I was trying to be clever and use my my Blesses Maker as the closeout.
I'll put it
at the end.
All right, chop it up.
Yeah, so going to the Dune Encyclopedia, because we always do. The encyclopedia actually doesn't have a lot in the way of the naming ceremony themselves or the importance of these war names, but it does talk a little bit about the Fremen practice of naming. And I just have an excerpt that I want to read, because I think it's A, it gives a little more insight, but B, it actually provides a little bit of humor.
I love it when the encyclopedia gives humor.
Yes. Yeah. So, the Fremen practice of naming, personal names, tribal names, nicknames, continued to show its traditional vigor and color. A high degree of concreteness marked the best examples of their naming customs. The name of the famous Fremen warrior in the Atreidian Jihad, Midri, means winnowing fork. Paul Muad'Dib's resourceful lieutenant in the battles of Topaz, Akrab, bore a name that means scorpion, and his elite troops, the Ide al-Akrab, were the hands of the scorpion. The Fremen Medical Corps, Abma, showed a rare instance in Fremen as the formation of an acronym. Its name stands for, and I'm going to probably mess this up, so sorry, Anamilin Bariya Min Al-Adam, fingers innocent of blood. Nor did Fremen lose its flair for humor and invective in fee assignment of names. Count Glossu Raban was especially well endowed in this
I'm
respect.
Sorry, what was that?
He was, of course, yeah, I realized. Shut up. He was, of course, known as Beast Rabban, and was called Mudir Nahya, Governor Cobra, a term that shows contact with indie speakers on Rossic, since it is a borrowed word deriving from the ancient Hindu Nag, snake. In addition to these, he was known in graffiti as Tawalil, which translates to wart, during his term as governor of Arrakis, specifically a wart on his uncle Vladimir Harkonnen, known as Al-Atanin, the jowl, or Salat ala Bekashwataya al-Jam, may God give him mange on his genitals. So, yeah.
Fremen Encyclopedia, throwing shade.
Fremen naming exists beyond just the secret names and the siege names. So
that's great.
But yeah, that's all that the Dune Encyclopedia really had to say about the Fremen naming ceremonies. So, as always, you can find us online. I don't know how to transition from there. But yeah, you can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. The Lorehounds have several social media channels available, but I'm going to go ahead and let David take over on those because I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, we're just on Blue Sky at the Lorehounds. The Lorehounds in your podcast application of choice. And I think we're going to throw in a link tree in the show notes for the week, where you can find us, a link to our community Discord, which you guys are on as well.
Yeah.
And it's a fun all place. Of our, yeah. Yeah, totally. And all of the other affiliate podcasts that we sponsor and participate with.
Of course. We will be back tomorrow to wrap this week of the Dune Minute up. And we will see you later for a Friday episode.
See you.